Hey guys, you're listening to Tech Webcast. This is Cody P. Christian of CPC Studios. Hey, if you're in the need for web design, web development, or multimedia services, please check out www.cpcstudios.com. That's cpcstudios.com.
Welcome to Tech Webcast, Australia's leading technology show. Download our iPhone app, www.techwebcast.info.
Welcome to episode 118 of the Tech Webcast podcast, recorded on Saturday the 19th of March 2011. Today's hosts are Brad, Dylan, Bryce and Jason, with special guest Andrew from Boxy. How's it going, Brad?
Hey Jason, how are you, mate?
Good, good. I'm looking forward to Friday.
Same, same.
Get my iPad 2, first iPad I've ever had.
Can't wait, mate. Same. I'm actually getting something something new on launch day. I've never done it before.
Yeah, sweet. And I'm playing with my Apple TV, having a lot of fun there.
Oh, wicked. You love that, mate?
Yeah, it's great to be able to just flick stuff up to the screen while cool. I'm watching it.
Good stuff. What's your
favorite? It's like an early birthday present for me, right?
It is, yeah.
It's my turning 40 on Monday.
Oh, really? Oh, shit. Oh.
It's all downhill from 40.
40, fuck.
Over the hill, right?
Yes.
Oh, is that Sally? You have to speak up. I'm wearing a towel.
You may need a hearing aid soon.
What?
Your back's going to go
out.
Who
are you?
Out.
Why don't your children visit anymore?
Now we've got Dylan there, everyone can hear, and also yes. Bryce, so I'll let Brad take over.
All right. Hey, Bryce, how are you, mate?
Yeah, good, man. Yourself?
Yeah, good, mate. Good. And also we have Dylan. Hello, Dylan.
Hey, Brad.
Hang on, mate. And also we have Andrew from Boxy Box. How are you, mate?
Doing well. How are you?
I'm going pretty well, mate. You're actually on the phone for people not wondering what's going on. So let's talk about Boxy Box. What do you do at Boxy Box, mate?
So I work for Boxy, and I do marketing, PR, and events. So I essentially, it's my job to make sure everybody in the world knows about Boxy and what we do.
Wicked, wicked. Now, a couple of questions before the other guys jump in. Is there going to be any new Australian content coming on the Boxy and also applications?
You know, in Australia, we just launched ABC iView, and I believe it's SMH.
Yep.
Is that the source?
Yes, yeah. That's the one. Yep, yep.
So those are now in the TV show library on Boxy. So we actually, rather than have everything inside of an app, we actually have a specific section where you can kind of search across a bunch of different websites for any TV show you're watching. Okay. So we've got those two. I know we're looking at adding four or five more.
Cool.
Off the top of my head, I don't know exactly which ones they are, but we're definitely trying to do as much as we can to add Australian content. And in terms of apps, we always have stuff in the pipeline. You know, what's great is we actually have a pretty large developer community that just builds apps on their own, apart from us. So, I never have 100% visibility into what's coming down the pipeline, but there's definitely some cool stuff coming. And as soon as I find out about it, I will definitely pass it along so you can pass it on to users and listeners.
What about firmware update? When's the next firmware update for Boxy Box?
We're shooting for end of March.
Okay.
For 1.5, and that's going to be, hasn't been really announced yet, but it's going to be a huge browser update.
Oh, wow.
That's one of the things that is really unique about Boxy is that, we have full browser support. You can watch anything in Flash, and what we're trying to do is make it more compatible with as many websites as possible, and also speed it up a lot. So it loads quicker, pages load faster. So you'll see that in the next update.
Wicked, man, wicked. All right, Bryce, got a question for Andrew?
Not really, man. I'm just contemplating about actually buying a box. It looks pretty tempting. It looks like a pretty awesome box, to be honest.
I'm glad to hear that. I heard somebody else mention Apple TV. So certainly here in the U.S., we compete against Apple TV, Roku, and Google TV. But at the same time, if one of those guys does really well, I think it benefits us all. We're all kind of in this battle to try and convince people who make TV shows and movies that you can really make money selling this stuff over the internet or showing it with ads. And much the same way iTunes did with music, we want to come out and reach out to those guys and make it really easy for consumers to get access to it on their TV rather than have them turn to alternatives like BitTorrent.
Is there going to be any sort of movie streaming applications for Australia anytime soon, Andrew?
How many movie services do you guys have?
We don't have many. Not that I know of, anyway. I don't know. I'm not sure if Jason or Bryce knows of any.
There's some basic thing called Quick Flicks, but nobody uses it.
Yeah, so, you know, if there was, like, one mainstream service, so here in the U.S., we're pretty lucky to have Netflix, and then we have a host of VOD people who, like Amazon and Vudu and a couple of others. In the U.K., they have Love Film. I think it really just takes us seeing that main entrance into the space. So if you guys had somebody big who had a lot of market share, I think we would definitely love to work with them. It takes a lot of work to get those things done.
Yeah.
So for us to take a gamble on somebody at this point doesn't really make a lot of sense. But what we're seeing is that model is kind of replicating around the globe. So the Boxy Box has launched in 34 countries. We see Netflix obviously started off in the U.S., now in Canada. Amazon here in the U.S. bought out Love Film in the U.K. So they're kind of slowly creeping across the globe. And as those guys come into the market or somebody else kind of copycats them, we look to work with them and bring that content on board.
For sure. All right. Okay, Jason, any questions for Andrew?
Yeah, now we've just jumped straight in here without any explanation of what exactly Boxy Box is, what it does, and where you can get one.
Sorry.
I was waiting for that one.
Yeah, I was going to actually ask that, but, you know.
So Boxy is essentially started off as five guys who stopped watching mainstream TV and started watching stuff all from their hard drives. And they thought, well, wouldn't it be cool to make a company out of this? And they started off with a software called XBMC, which stands for the Xbox Media Center Project. And that was a kind of a software hack to turn your Xbox into a way to watch stuff from your home network on your TV screen. And what they did with Boxy is take that XBMC code and transform it into something that had internet content, had content on a hard drive, had a social element, and really transform Boxy into the best way to take all that stuff that you watch on your computer and bring it to the TV screen in a way that makes sense, more so than just plugging in your laptop to your TV.
You had a bit of a problem at some stage with places blocking you. Have you managed to get that sorted out?
For the most part, yeah. I mean, Hulu, which was the big kind of controversial one, is the only company that's ever really asked us to take their content down. And we are in talks with them right now to bring on Hulu Plus, which is their paid subscription content here in the U.S. But overall, you know, these guys are looking for new ways to make revenue. We bring them millions of users, and lots of eyeballs and lots of engaged people. And actually, there was a study done around the users of Views. If you guys know that, a BitTorrent program.
I've heard of that. Yeah.
And the people who are, you know, using Views and supposedly downloading illegal content were the ones who were also going to the movies more, who were paying for, you know, premium releases, who were spending a lot of money on entertainment, but just turning to torrents when they couldn't find what they wanted. So, for example, in Australia, you know, without a good movie service, there's probably a lot of movies that you guys want to watch but can't legally find anywhere.
And they're usually released many months later.
Yeah, exactly, which sucks, especially when you're, like, you're on the internet and you can see what people are saying about it, you can see the reviews. You probably know where to get it for free anyway, so it just doesn't make much sense the way that these companies are going around about it. But they've been doing it for so long that, you know, they don't know quite how to move into this new paradigm. And so we're working with them to try and educate them and get them on board and show them how they can do that in a way that makes sense.
Speaking of the torrents that you were talking about, I noticed this week that Paramount have announced that they're going to be releasing a movie called The Tunnel via torrents. What do you think of that?
You know, it's always good, from my perspective, it's always good when you see traditional media companies embracing new technologies like BitTorrent. I think they're going after where the audience or where they think the audience is, which makes a lot of sense. Because, like I said, you know, the guys who are torrenting stuff are really passionate about entertainment. They love watching new movies and getting access to this kind of stuff. So I think it makes a lot of sense. And it's good for BitTorrent, the company, and the protocol in a way, because it's kind of legitimizing what they do, which is actually pretty phenomenal in terms of delivering content around the globe really quickly and effectively using peer-to-peer technology.
Obviously, the people who are using the torrent, who are downloading these shows, are the most passionate fans of the show, which is the main reason they're using it, to try and get access as soon as possible. So you would think they should actually do some sort of support of that.
You know, there's essentially the problem is either they can't get access to it, or they can't get access to it at an affordable price or in the timeline that they're looking for. And I think, yeah, there's definitely a lot that can be done to make sure that anybody who wants to watch this gets it in a way that makes sense for them. And I think that's where the companies, the traditional media companies, are kind of struggling to figure out what is that model and does that make sense? You know, is that the same model for Summer High Tide as it is for something like Avatar? How do those things kind of play together? Do you put it out in the movie theaters at the same time as you release it over the internet for, you know, let's say $5, $10? And it's all kind of tied up in this historical contracts and what we call windowing. So the idea that, you know, I release a movie from this date to this date in the theater, from this date to this date on HBO, from this date to this date afterwards on DVD, and it kind of continues down the line.
You know, I think it has a lot to do with these companies. I understand these old media companies don't exactly know how to come into this market. I think the problem is that, you know, like with Hulu, for example, when you said they asked you to take their content down, that's that just kind of bothers me. It's all about ease of access in my mind. It's about how easily you can access the content, because if you're going to go and download a movie illegally, 9 times out of 10, it's because you can't easily stream it somewhere legally.
Yep.
In my opinion, that's why if downloading it illegally becomes easier than buying it, then that's what people are going to do. And if we make buying it and streaming it legally easier than breaking the law, then more people will do that. That's how we get rid of piracy. We don't get rid of that by locking content down and charging outrageous amounts and releasing it a month after it airs on TV or on DVD or whatever. They gotta change some things here.
And then segregate the country so it gets rolling releases in America and then the UK and then Australia and then another country. And that just annoys people more than anything. I still don't understand these days what's the whole point of the regional locks. Just annoys people.
I don't think they do anything. And the first time I thought about, well, would it make sense for a movie to be available online the same day it goes to theaters? Would that make sense? At first I said no, because then no one would go to the theaters. But then I was like, wait a minute. The first day it's out in theaters, it's already online. It might not be a high-quality version, but it's already online and people are already downloading it. So you may as well put it out there.
Yeah, exactly.
Sure. All right, okay. Andrew, can you hang around for a few more minutes, mate? We've just got some tech news to do and an email to read out, mate.
Yeah, sure.
All right, so Dylan, have you got an email for us, mate?
Yeah, I got an email here. This was from a listener. I'm not sure his or her name. I don't see it
it's
here.
A guy.
But
it's his name, Nino.
Sorry, what now?
His name's Ion.
Oh, okay. Awesome. Well, he writes in, Yo, techers and crew, what's up? I have a question. Now that the Motorola Zoom will be out on the 27th, along with a free download of the 10.0 Flash Player, iPad 2 or Motorola Zoom, which would you choose? Or I guess he's trying to say, which would you choose and why? And what do you think about the prices? Both have very good specs. If you can discuss that, that would rock. But if not, that's cool also. Well, we will discuss that.
For me, I would have to say iPad 2. It's got an existing environment that's well connected together. You can get your movies. You can get shows to watch and music, anything you like. Thousands and thousands and thousands of apps. So many apps that you can't believe it. The Zoom is unproven technology. It's running on the new Android, I think, Gingerbread, which has only just come out. It's the first Android version that's to run on pad devices or tablets. It's got hardly any ecosystem. There's only a few tablet-specific apps on the Android market, and it's probably going to cost, in Australia at least, $300 or $400 more than the iPads, which are already well-established. So I'm not sure what Dylan would think, though.
I agree with you, Jason. The iPad 2, mate, rocks, and I won't go to anything else.
You know what? I would actually, right now, have to say iPad 2, but let me also say that if you ask me in 6 months, I'd probably say Motorola Zoom or whatever other new Android tablets out at the time, and that's because, like Jason said, it's new. There's not even that many tablet-optimized apps that are available yet. But once we do start to see those, once we do start to see more developers making apps for it, I think it could take off and become as good, if not better, than the iTunes App Store marketplace. Yeah, but sure. For right now, iPad 2. I will give the Motorola Zoom credit though for being the first usable Android tablet, because anyone that's used an Android tablet before 3.0 knows how bad it was to use a version of Android that was meant to be on a small cell phone screen and not on a blown up on a big tablet. It wasn't optimized at all. It was just nasty. It's getting better.
Yeah. And there are so many of those ones that are not Google approved, so they don't get the Google Marketplace program on there, so you have to find other ways of installing the applications. It's just not quite as easy.
The thing is, once these things take off, you're going to have to run a damn antivirus on it.
Yes.
You're going to have to run an Android antivirus on your tablet.
Well, Google has just removed 50 apps that had malware and stuff in them from their app store, so from their marketplace, I should say, because the app store may soon be copyrighted, name trademarked. But, I'd say at this stage, just stick with the iPad. It's proven and it works and there's a lot of support for it. Maybe a couple of years' time, the others will have something worthwhile competing.
Sure. What about you, Andrew? What's your view on the iPad 2, mate?
I would kind of hedge my bet a lot and say it really depends on who you are as a user. And I see this, obviously, in my market as well. And if you're a techie early adopter and you really love the control and flexibility of Android on a mobile phone, you're probably going to love getting that and experiencing it on a Zoom, and you're going to want that flexibility and the ability to tinker, which is what so much of PCs are about. But if you're more inclined to, you want to have a great experience, you want to have something that is very polished and kind of taken care of, then the iPad 2 is definitely the way to go. I didn't have an original iPad. All the guys in the office had one, but I'm not one to buy first gen hardware a lot of the time. So I just ordered an iPad 2, and for me, it's really crucial just because I need to be on top of the latest technology, the latest apps, the latest interfaces, and everybody develops that for iOS first, and then ports it over to Android. I have an Android phone right now, and it drives me nuts. Because it's like a PC. I have to go in and optimize it. I have to kill services. I have to stop running programs, kill processes, just to be able to use the phone in a normal fashion.
Wow.
If anybody has tips and tricks, like it takes me 45 seconds to make a phone call because I'm waiting for things to load. So I'm not the biggest fan of Android. I think Google has a track record of releasing things that aren't quite done. In the startup world, we call it Ready, Fire, Aim. So it's this idea of just get something out there, and then you'll have time to perfect it and really listen to your audience and make it what they need it to be. And I think it's the same is probably going to be true of Zoom. So down the line, it'll get good, but certainly right off the bat, I think they're going to have some struggles.
Sure. And what about you, Bryce? What's your view on the iPad 2, mate?
I really like it. I think it's going to be really good. Hopefully, it'll get here in Australia when they say it will. But stocks are pretty low in the US right now. I have a few people looking for it in the US, and yeah, nobody can find anything. Stocks are really low.
Wow, that's crazy.
But yeah, it looks really good. Awesome.
Okay. All right. Well, let's jump into some tech news, Jason.
Alrighty, the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission has filed a lawsuit against IBM, alleging the company paid bribes to government officials in China and South Korea to secure deals for the sale of mainframe and PCs among different government agencies. The lawsuit, which was filed in the U.S. District Court for the District of Columbia, alleges the Big Blue violated the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act of 1977, the same act that ensnared Sun Microsystems in May 2009 and Hewlett-Packard in September 2010. In South Korea, between 1998 and 2003, the SEC alleges employees of IBM Korea and a PC partnership operated by IBM and LG Electronics paid an estimated $207,000 in bribes. According to the suit, various IBM China subsidiaries provided travel, entertainment, and improper gifts to Chinese government officials. High-level employees, the IBM China organization were involved, and over 100 IBM China employees were involved in the bribery scam to win deals for Big Blue. Here's an interesting fact. If Google had launched just a couple of years earlier, Apple's Steve Jobs might have been its CEO. Way back in 2000, Google was just getting rolling, but its backers in the venture capital world decided the fledgling search giant needed adult supervision by way of a more experienced CEO than Google co-founders Larry Page and Sergey Brin. Venture capitalist John Doerr immediately came on board to arrange some interviews between Page and Brin and many of the finest business minds in Silicon Valley. Page and Brin met with Intel's Andre Grove, Amazon's Jeff Bezos, and several others. All were rejected, though. Why? Because Page and Brin had only one person in mind for the position, Steve Jobs. It's an interesting alternate history to consider. If Steve Jobs had come aboard Google in 2000, we'd probably be looking at a very different world right now, one in which Google boosted retail stores and people waited outside of them all night for tablets. A world in which Android boasted a walled garden, in which Apple remains an extremely niche computer maker concentrated entirely upon the desktop, as opposed to the most valuable company in tech largely through their mobile innovations. Of course, in 2000, Jobs wasn't available. He triumphantly returned to Apple back in 1998, and in 2000 he was busy preparing the release of the original iPod, which was about to revolutionize the company and open the door for everything from the iPhone to the iPad. Instead, Page and Brin were convinced to widen their net of possible CEOs. Eventually, in 2001, Brin and Page were persuaded to hire Google's current CEO, Eric Schmidt. He's no Steve Jobs, but no one can argue he steered the company wrong over the course of the last decade. Dig co-founder Kevin Rose is focusing his efforts in a new direction. Following a report on TechCrunch that said Rose had resigned from his post at Dig, Rose confirmed via Twitter that he was indeed at work on a new project, but that he'd continue advising Dig and be on the board of Dig directors, as well as taping episodes of Dig Nation. As for that next project, Rose said in a tweet that it would be revealed soon. Rose had relinquished his post as Dig's interim CEO in August of last year after filling in for 4 months following the departure of Jay Adelson, the company's CEO, for 5 years. Rose was replaced by former Amazon executive Matt Williams, who continues to run the day-to-day operations at the startup. Rose's words about his scale-back role at the time were that he would still remain actively involved in the product. Parental locks are mandatory for all new TV gear sold in Australia, but they're ridiculously easy to bypass. While we argue about mandatory internet filtering and an R18 rating for games, another government Think of the Children initiative has managed to fly under the radar. It's now mandatory for all digital television equipment sold in Australia to feature a parental lock, letting parents block television shows according to their classification. As with other censorship efforts, the new parental lock is easily bypassed, lulling parents into a false sense of security. The parental lock can easily be foiled on a wide range of digital television equipment by simply pausing the live broadcast for a few seconds during the previous program. when the supposedly blocked program begins, it's not blocked as it's running on a slight delay rather than live. So if your child innocently pauses the show for a quick toilet break, when they press play again, the parental lock will be temporarily disabled. Extra security precautions to foil all these workarounds are only built into a handful of digital video recorders, such as the TiVo and Foxtel's IQ2. Owners of other digital television gear shouldn't place their trust in the parental lock until they've tested it. As is often the case, you can't rely on technology to do a parent's job. And that's the news for today.
Good news, mate. And you won't be here next week, so we may have to get some recorded news.
Yeah, not a problem.
Cool. Good stuff, mate. Okay, back over to Andrew with Boxy Box. Mate, how did you come up with the design of it?
The melted box.
Yeah, the melted box sort of design. I love it. You there?
I actually, I had a question for you before we jump into this. I know Australia is kind of considered a nanny state in the fact that, you know, the government is doing all these regulations to make sure people can't get access to adult content. Where does that come from?
I'm not really sure. Jason, you got an answer for that, mate?
No, it's something that's been burning for a few years and ready to pop out, and the politicians, I think, just trying to get some way of getting votes on their side, think that they can do that. There's a well-known political group here called Family First, which is run by Reverend Niall, Fred Niall, who likes to think of family and children and stuff, and I think he likes to push for a lot of things like this, so it could be something that's come from his party, but where it originated from, I'm not exactly sure.
Well,
you know, I think this whole thing is done with, you know, they have good intentions. I don't think the Australian government just wants to be able to get to a point where they can block anything that they want. I think they are actually attempting to do something good here. They're just going about it wrong. What I don't understand, and what I've said a million times, is why does the democratic government of Australia seem to think that they have the right to censor the internet? They don't.
Okay, that's good answer.
I think that's wrong. If the government here passed a law censoring the internet, there'd be big problems. I would actually expect rioting in the streets in this country. It's just, you know, it's like, I don't think that a government that claims to be democratic and takes votes from its citizens should be able to have the right to say, oh, that website, no, we don't like that. Therefore, no one in the country can see it now, no matter what it is.
Okay. All right. What about you, Bryce? What's your view on this topic, mate, before we get back to Andrew?
On the censorship in Australia?
Yeah.
I don't know. I kind of agree with Dylan. I think that they're just going about it the wrong way. They probably have good intentions, to be honest. But yeah.
All right. Okay. So Andrew, how did you come up with the design, mate, of the Boxy Box?
thanks for taking that little detour. I appreciate it.
All good, mate. No worries.
We worked with a company called Astro Designs that put together the Xbox 360 as well as the HP Blackbird series. Those high performance PCs, and went to their offices and kind of told them, you know, what the box was going to do and what we wanted, and they got familiar with the Boxy brand. And essentially, we looked at a variety of different shapes. We looked at what they call a pizza box, which is kind of the typical DVD shape, and we really wanted, you know, we're going to call it the Boxy box, so we wanted to look like a box. So we came up with the idea of a cube. And then when we looked at it, the size and the dimensions actually reminded us too much of a Nintendo GameCube from back in the day. So they kind of got creative with it, and they were like, you know, we can chop off a side, we can put it on its edge, like, or put it on a corner. And they did a couple different variations. And I think for everybody, as soon as we saw the design that it is now, which we call the Sunken Cube, everybody was like, that's it. That's what we want.
Yeah, I love the design. It looks very cool. And yeah, love it.
There hasn't been any issues with people complaining that they can't really fit it in where they would put it on top of a DVD player or something?
You know, people, I think a lot of people who when they do complain, it's because they haven't seen it in real life. So they don't have an idea of how big it is. Literally, it's, you know, not even as tall as a can of soda. So it's very, you know, it fits easily into an AV rack. I think for a lot of people, you know, if they were frustrated, basically we just say, look, it's an RF remote, so you don't have to point anything at it. You don't have to point the remote and get line of sight. You can just hide it away in a closet, tape it to the back of a TV, put it underneath something. So it's really easy. It's a really easy fix if you don't like the look of it. And certainly we'll have other devices that come out with Boxy embedded that, you know, have a more traditional form factor. But for this one, we really wanted this to be like our baby and to stand out. And so we wanted to design something that, you know, you had to put on the top of your, if you had a stack of components,
yes,
you put it on top so that when people come over, they're like, what is that? And you would have a chance to tell them about Boxy,
yes,
and hopefully be an evangelist.
That's happened to me. Happened to me a few times when people come over here. Now, with the new firmware coming out at the end of March, is that going to be also for the Boxy software for the computer?
No. So right now we're really focused on the Box. The software is free and anybody can go download it now. But we've kind of put a lot of the updates on hold for that platform simply because we're a company of 34 people, only about 20 or 18 of which are actually programmers. And we're now supporting 8 different platforms from Windows XP all the way up to Windows 7, from OS 10.4, 0.5, 0.6, plus Ubuntu, plus the Boxy Box. So with that team and those resources, we really wanted to dedicate everything we could to the people who had spent $200 to buy a Boxy Box, or I think it's 300 in Australia.
Yeah, about 300. Yeah, yep.
Yeah. So we want to take care of the people that have invested in a device and really kind of perfect the platform there. So add in everything that we want, design wise, feature wise, and then take it back to the PC platform and update it.
Cool. So what's the next step for Boxy Box? What sort of features are we going to see in the next firmware update and that sort of thing?
In the next what?
In the next firmware update. What sort of features are we going to see, if any?
So we touched on that a little bit earlier. We're going to see the browser update.
Yep.
I think for us, one of the big things that's upcoming is our iPad app.
iPad, yep, yep.
So for everybody who does decide to go iPad 2, you will have an app to not only control Boxy and kind of watch things, you'll be able to send things from your iPad to the Boxy Box or to your Boxy software on your PC.
Mm-hmm.
But you'll also be able to see what your friends are watching, see your feed, see your queue, all that kind of stuff on the actual iPad. And you'll be able to stream stuff from your computer to your iPad. So, for example, I got a computer downstairs in the other room that has some movies that are not on it. And I'll be able to just sit in bed with my iPad and watch those movies there.
Sick, man. And
so a lot of cool features.
I also love the iPhone app as well, the remote for the iPhone. I love that.
Yeah, that was... I'm sitting outside of a hair salon on the sidewalk here in New York, and the guy who owns the salon just came up and jumped in.
That's funny.
So, yeah, the iPhone app actually has been downloaded, I think, hundreds of thousands of times. And it really, before we had the Box, it was the best way to never have to use the on-screen keyboard on the TV, which is just a nightmare.
Yeah.
So it was great because you could just, you know, get to a search box or a text box or whatever, and then the iPhone keyboard would pop up. And we've got, I think now we've got BlackBerry remotes, Palm remotes, iPhone remotes, Android remotes. So we've got pretty much every mobile platform covered.
Cool, cool. Have you had much feedback about the remote that comes with the Boxy Box?
Yes. People absolutely love it.
Yep.
The only complaints I hear is that it's not backlit.
Yeah, I agree.
Which we're working on.
That needs to be done.
And then that the orientation or the way that you hold it is actually ambiguous. So you can't tell what's up and what's down.
Mm-hmm.
Just by holding it. You can, if you look at it, there's a logo that shows you which one's the bottom, which one's the top. But It's nice to be able to pick it up and feel and know that you're playing it the right way. So
yeah.
We're definitely looking at those things and trying to figure out how we improve them and meet those demands. But I think overall, just the fact that we threw the QWERTY keyboard on the back, which is something we've been wanting to do since 2007, kind of blew a lot of people away and got them really excited about it.
Cool, man. And also, I reckon you should make the keys a little bit bigger. They're a bit small.
Say that one more time.
The keys on the remote are a bit small.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, that would be a bit small for me. But anyway.
And Brad, yes. Brad, we had an interview recently on our Tech Webcast show with a group in Australia called Beam TV,
who have a
beta program where you can use an online PVR to record your favorite free-to-air shows. So that might be something that Boxy could add in the future.
Yeah, that would be cool. Yeah, maybe Andrew could speak to them for us and get them on board.
I would love to have you guys actually build it out. I need to talk to them and have them do it. But a lot of times, these services that we don't know about, actually, people just go to developer.boxy.tv and figure out how to build an app for it themselves.
All right. Cool. All right. We'll do that. I'll let them guys know. And, any questions before we go, Jason or Bryce or Dylan?
No, that's it for me for Boxy.
When will Tech Webcast be featured in Boxy? When are we going to be you turn on your Boxy box and before you can even do anything, you get it just covers the TV, download Tech Webcast.
Yeah, that'd be awesome, right?
Yeah, that'd be cool.
I think we got to get up to
at least episode 150.
150? We're almost there.
You know, I think we might already be on Boxy. I'm not sure. I know that this show is available on Roku through the through techpodcast.com. I'm not sure if techpodcast.com runs through Boxy or not.
If it does, they are on there.
Yes. Okay. Then we're already on Boxy.
Yep, we're on there. And Bryce, any questions for Andrew before we go, mate?
No, that's it, man.
That's it. Jason, where can they find you on the internet?
JasonOakley.me and Warlock on Twitter, WAULOK.
And happy birthday for Monday. And
thanks.
And Bryce, where can they find you?
Yep, YouTube.com/BILSDA57 and Twitter.com/BILSDA57.
Good man. And Dylan?
I am at Facebook.com/TheDylanCombs. I'm Dylan Combs TV on Twitter. And for everything else, just go to Combs.TV.
Good stuff, mate. And Andrew, where can they find you, mate?
You can check out Boxy at boxy.tv, as in television. You can find us on @Boxy. And if you're looking for me specifically, I go by @Academic, A-C-A-D-E-M-I-K.
Good stuff, mate. And big thank you for being on the show, mate. Appreciate it.
Yeah, my pleasure. And if anybody has questions or anything, I'm always available. Just hit me up on Twitter and I'll get back to you.
Okay. And for the person who left the bad comment on iTunes, you lost the game and... you're not getting your 30 minutes back because you suck.
This is Tech Webcast. Technology.
Gadgets.
And other geeky stuff.
It's on iTunes. It's awesome.
And it's from the future.
Follow us at twitter.com/techwebcast.
And
on Facebook. And check techwebcast.info. For info, Tech Webcast.
Turn on, tune in, drop on.